fighting for America. Fighting for Idaho.
They asked us to try to get three people to vote for the bond, and so I was trying to do my part.
The multi-million dollar bond would build two middle schools and an elementary school, remodel and expand Meridian High, and buy property where another school can be built in the future.
Fighting for you.
One had to hire an attorney to write a letter to force them off her property, and the other one had to get her big burly neighbor to come down and basically threaten them.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And living the dream, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Joining us now, the chairman of the state Republican Party, also the chief executive officer of DC Intel Advisory, a man that has... ubiquitous presence on media in all forms, plus a day job, plus a great family, plus a state party to run. Stephen Yates, good morning, Mr. Yates, Chairman Yates.
Hi, Kevin. Kevin, it's great to be with you again.
You know, how many interviews do you do a week, you figure?
Well, it kind of depends on what's breaking, but in the last couple of days, it's been, I think we're at 7 or 8 so far in the last 2 days of TV and radio. But as you know, in the radio business, people, when they start wanting to talk about something, it's everywhere. And so the Netanyahu speech has been pretty much nonstop for the last 2 days.
I'm with you. By the way, dare we say the pride of Idaho Falls? Can we add that to your...
any kind of compliment, always welcome. no complaints whatsoever on that front.
Well, we just want to make sure that we're doing our part because, it's always so competitive in politics and everything else in the media business. We want to make sure we're in your top five when it comes to all these interviews because you're Fox News Channel, Fox Business Channel, CNN. You're on, CNBC Asia. I really don't have a life, so I live mine through you.
Well, thankfully, since coming to Idaho, I was able to get an office and build a studio that is within a mile of my house. So this is a relatively easy commute to do these things, and it's one of the beauties of Idaho life.
And by the way, Mike Baker loves your place here in Boise.
He has been doing great work there, and I'm a huge fan of Mike Baker.
Well, we're blessed to have you both, so let's get right to it. Boy, it's so funny because I want to be counterintuitive and talk to you about state politics and national politics, but Netanyahu, did it make a difference yesterday?
I think it did make a difference in a couple of important ways. Strategically, a lot of focus had been on the timing of this and should or should not a prime minister of Israel come a couple of weeks before an election without emphasizing that our negotiators weren't slowing down during Israel's election cycle. And they're, in fact, accelerating, pushing toward a deal. And we hadn't really had a national focus on things. There hadn't been a sort of unifying, galvanizing voice to sort of say, slow down or watch out. And these negotiations, Israel's not a part of them. This P5 plus one, the permanent five of the UN Security Council, Israel's not a member of that negotiating group. So when is Israel supposed to step forward and say, hold it, our national interests are at stake, except for when those things are hitting their sort of concluding point? So you had that timeline that I think was compelling for Netanyahu to come and speak. There were obvious political elements of it, too. But he said things that I think a majority of Americans would agree on, like don't take the restrictions off of Iran until they stop threatening the security of their neighbors, until they stop supporting terrorism worldwide, until they stop calling for the annihilation of the state of Israel, which obviously would matter to a prime minister of Israel, but I think to a lot of Americans, too.
Is the president really on a resume tour? Because, and you know the intelligence community better than just about anybody, the Iranians really haven't shown good faith. They still have Pastor Saeed. They still have many Americans there. They seem to break the rules that, as we continue to rewrite them.
That's right, and I think that was another fundamental point that resonates with most Americans. Those of us who served in government and been parts of these negotiations, we've seen this movie before with North Korea and Iran in different instances, multiple administrations of both parties. You go in, you have these deals, they're sold as if they're going to make some kind of a big difference. But look at what happened with North Korea. We had an agreed framework. It was supposed to last for about 10 years conspicuously. And at the end of that process, North Korea came out with the capability to have nuclear devices that they've detonated. So there's real solid analytical reason to question how much should you give up, what restrictions should you lift, and what confidence should you have that these deals will actually mean something.
Here's the other thing. I mean, we have Iran, who's a sponsor of Hezbollah, Hamas. They seem to be, with the Iraqis now because of ISIS, but they might have some ties to ISIS as well. Besides the resume tour, is there any legitimate reason that gives the administration cover to have a deal with Tehran to say, I ended the war in Afghanistan, ended the war in Iraq, never mind the Middle East is a mess, and I've brought the Iranians back into the international fold?
That's the best they could possibly do with it. But I think that most people are wise to the notion that this administration doesn't exactly have a string of successes to build that kind of a resume on. I mean, people look at what's happened in Libya. Libya's influenced by ISIS, and the Christians were executed on the beaches of Libya. We have Syria, a civil war that's grinding along, and no idea what in the world the American policy is with regard to Assad at this point or what it's all going to come to. And we don't even talk about challenges in East Asia, but do people really believe the Chinese leadership sits around day and night not thinking of ways to take advantage of our interests? And so I think it's very obvious to people that the world is not moving in a direction more hospitable to America. And I thought that Prime Minister Netanyahu framed it reasonably well when he said, look, it's a bad deal. No deal is better than a bad deal. This is a bad deal. But the alternative is not war. The alternative is to get a much better deal. And people can say, well, that's not possible right now. Okay, well, but does that mean we have to concede, appease, and basically lay the foundation for Iran to get these ultimate capabilities? We really need to, I think, have a more mature conversation, and maybe the presidential primaries will be that. Mm. We'll see. But a more mature conversation about what are the middle ground options for America and its allies between the extreme of all-out war and appeasement, which seems to be where we're stuck.
As someone who has worked at the highest levels in the White House, we'll give you a chance here to give your thoughts, having been in the room with the commander-in-chief, with the vice president. Here is President Obama yesterday giving his comments on Benjamin Netanyahu.
As far as I can tell, there was nothing new. The Prime Minister, I think, appropriately pointed out that the bond between the United States and America is unbreakable, and on that point, I thoroughly agree.
I'm glad the United States and America have a great bond, but I don't want to lead the witness. Your thoughts on his comments?
Well, I just thought it was extraordinary that he seemed to go out of his way and have his team just relentlessly question the legitimacy of Prime Minister Netanyahu's position. And he had a lot of choices. He didn't have to welcome and embrace Netanyahu visiting at this time, but he chose instead to seemingly take it as a personal offense, as if the president's feelings should matter. He's supposed to be a commander-in-chief. But he could have chosen to say, look, it wouldn't have been the timing I'd wish for, but the bond between the United States and Israel is strong. I welcome him to Washington. I may or may not have time to meet with him, what have you. There's lots of different ways he could have chosen to frame it, but instead he had his administration essentially attack Netanyahu. And I think that the Americans who dialed in to listen to what Netanyahu had to say, they might not agree with 100% of what he had to say, but it's a lot more clear and compelling than anything our president has had to say on this matter in a long time.
Back to your point about it being personal, it seems to be that's the case with the inflection where you have the president right after the speech is done, well, I read the transcript and nothing new and everything else. Again, he has made it personal. And Netanyahu yesterday and before other groups was very gracious to President Obama.
You're absolutely right. I mean, Prime Minister Netanyahu had two major speeches in Washington, one before AIPAC, the big pro-Israel lobbying group, and then the next day before Congress, went out of his way to express personal respect for the president and respect for the office of the president. He went out of his way to pay respect to Democrats. The only thing I would quibble with was his opening line in the address to Congress where he talked about Harry Reid and called him a good man. I have my questions about that.
Moving on, where do we go in the Middle East right now? We don't really hear a lot out of Iraq. We don't hear a lot about Afghanistan, but from your friends, from your day job, one of many, what are you hearing about the stability in Afghanistan?
Well, no good news is what I hear. There's a lot of questions about the durability of the governments that are there working in the wake of our withdrawal. And in Afghanistan, in some ways, the change in government was helpful. There were a lot of questions about Hamid Karzai as a person, and his successor is a much more competent technocrat, but he's dealing with a tough hand. The only upside for him is that the center of gravity in the global Islamist terrorist network has moved to the Iraq and Syria geography and away from Afghanistan, uncomfortably for some, precisely as President Bush predicted.
You take a look at ISIS. You had Sarah Palin comparing them to the Nazis. Of course, that's the last time the country was in total war. How big of a threat is ISIS? We have other people saying, you know, let the folks in that neighborhood deal with them.
Well, it's always a difficult call to say when you allow danger to gather abroad, at what point will it begin to affect you here? And do you want to begin preparing for dissuading, containing, or influencing and after you've been attacked in a significant way? Or do you want to work with your allies to constrain, if not defeat, a gathering danger before it comes to your shores in a significant way? And of course, we have indications that there are people in the United States who've been targets of recruitment, and we've had plenty of incidents in the United States that are attributed to Islamist radicalism. And whether they are lone wolves, you sort of have to question at how many lone wolves does it take before you stop calling them lone? And so there's, I think, multiple angles of where the American challenge is. I think it's certainly awkward to talk about immigration reform at the same time you have a movement like this that seeks to take advantage of loopholes to get into other countries, recruit, build, and to disrupt what we do. And, of course, sometimes you have to take your enemies at their word. The ISIS leaders, as well as other Islamists, say that they aim to attack America and undermine our way of life. Maybe they mean it.
Well, it's kind of like Iran when they call you the great Satan and they want to destroy you. You take them seriously or peril at your own naivete, if you will. Do you have any more time, or are you rolling today?
I can stay with you.
Okay,
I
didn't know if we had you for one segment or two. Please stand by. More coming up with State GOP Chairman Stephen Yates. We'll take your calls at 580-5436. We do want to talk a little bit about state politics and national politics as well, plus more on international issues. Let's get you to work safe.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
/7:23, Kevin Miller in the morning. Idaho State GOP Chairman Stephen Yates with us. Chairman Yates, you take a look at, as you mentioned earlier, the big controversy involving funding of the Department of Homeland Security. Many folks upset with Speaker Boehner giving the president a clean bill that will, go back and forth with the Senate, then the president will sign. Of course, they've only got 3 or 4 days left until funding runs out. Your perspective on that move from the House?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be this problem when you have divided government about what tactic can get you to the goal you seek, and it'll take some time in some scenarios. It seems to me that they've somewhat punted this over to the judicial branch. There's apparently a case moving through the process where there may be a ruling that will go against the administration. I have grown weary of these threats about shutdowns, not from the sense of people shouldn't make them. I get tired of the way they're framed. The Department of Homeland Security was not going to be shut down. There were many elements of it that were going to be completely unaffected. In fact, most of the security elements of it would be unaffected. This was really an exercise in the Democrats putting amnesty as a higher priority over Homeland Security, and they were playing with this in ways, and we'll never get the majority of media to cover it in a way that shows who's really being obstructionist and who's putting their priority ahead of the majority. But there we are. So, I mean, I didn't really like the idea of moving back, and both of our senators voted against that strategy in the Senate. The House is sort of on the receiving end of what the Senate is willing to do at this point. So it's not what I think a majority of Republicans want to see. In the end, if there's some real move to push back against the president's, I think, unlawful encroachment in this area, if there is a significant move in there, maybe people will look at the results, but I don't think they like the tactics at the moment.
Well, we take a look at the national debate concerning immigration, and, you know, they, as you've said, they've booted it to the courts. What does this mean if the president decides to ignore the ruling? I guess the appeal is going on right now. What does that mean to the future of the two-party system?
Well, it's one of these things where we have a constitutional structure in place where you have to have essentially what the Democrats had for the first 2 years of the Obama administration, where you have your party with a 60-plus seat majority in the Senate and control of the House and control of the White House, and then you are able to do, as the president said, engage in some fundamental transformation activities. But if you don't have that alignment in our system, it's hard to hold back against a determined president and where he's pushing. And so to me, it's frustrating to watch. The two-party system also, you have the national party, you have the people who are elected in Congress. Republicans in general tend to culturally resist being told where they should line up, and you'll have more division among our ranks. Democrats tend to sort of line up behind what their script is and hold together. It's the way unions organize, and the party itself seems to operate that way. So we have our challenges in that regard. I don't think people like watching the process and are frustrated with it. But as I say, when it comes to this immigration thing, there are two things that frustrate me most of all. One, security should always be the highest priority. Number two, immigration is about more than just one country's border with us. It's a much bigger challenge than just how many people are coming across the southern border.
CPAC was this weekend. Many people believe it's audition hour. All the presidentials were there, some big names, some not so big names. Your thoughts on that, and where does Idaho rank?
Well, I would have liked to have been there. I've gone to CPAC many years. It is kind of a fun beauty pageant to watch people come up on stage and see who gets what reaction from the crowd and who buses in their crowd. And there's always a straw poll that has somewhat of a predictable winner in recent years. I thought it's helpful to have people come, and some do better than others. Obviously, to a very intense conservative audience, you have very good response to some of our senators who are candidates. I mean, Senator Cruz had a script that was extremely well received by the audience. Marco Rubio came in. I thought he was well received. They did a little different format this time with Q&A, so it wasn't just kind of a stump speech, audition kind of speech alone. People gave Jeb Bush credit for coming in, but I don't think he got a lot of welcome response from the regular folks at CPAC, in the sense they gave him credit for coming in, but would rather he be on our side on some major issues like Common Core and immigration. So where does Idaho fit in with this? We are inviting all of the potential candidates to come to Idaho. We have a summer meeting for the state party in the first weekend of June. We'd like to have a candidate or two come and address our members and get a broader Idaho audience. We have a bill before the legislature that is the legislature's bill, but if it passes, we will support it and go along with it, moving to a Super Tuesday primary. And that keeps delegates at play. We're either going to have a caucus, or if the legislature bill passes, an early primary. And presidential campaigns are already in touch with us to talk about when they'll come through the state to contend for those delegates. And, of course, they'd like to raise money in our state as well.
Finally, okay, you've got your day job, your media appearances, your volunteer job, your family. Any time management tips you want to share with us this morning?
Yeah, well, I just recommend people be careful about how much time they volunteer away, but no complaints from me. I volunteer my time away to things I really care about. And there are a lot of people around our state who volunteer for this work, too. I appreciate all they do just as much.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got to go over to Idaho Falls soon and hang out with you sometime.
Anytime is welcome. This side of the state is happy to have you.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Take care, Kevin.
All right. Chairman Stephen Yates with us. Our friend Ron Paul Jim has been holding for quite some time, even before the chairman was on. It would be rude not to go to him here at 580KIDO. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, how many years has it been, like 20 years
that Netanyahu said Iran was a year away from having nuclear weapons? Isn't that a correct statement?
Well, there are a lot of statements. I'm going to go with you. You're the expert on that region.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm the expert, but, you know, that declaration has been going on for quite a while. So, and, you know, there's a whistleblower on trial in D.C. or Virginia or something where it's been revealed that there's actually been an attempt over the years that the CIA has been trying to sell technology to Iran that would have a few tweaks that would make it inoperable to have a nuke. And this attempt that was revealed during this trial was actually, they tested it by giving it to a university to see if they could figure out that where the errors were without telling them. And it took them 6 months to a year to figure out and correct the problem and the plan. And this has been apparently a practice that they were trying to do so that they would establish that timeline and also have evidence that they were actually trying to pursue nukes. But this apparently has never come to fruition as of this time. But kind of interesting that the CIA is trying to bait Iran and then claim that they're doing something that basically, it's kind of like what the FBI does with these lone wolf, disgruntled people and turn them into would-be terrorists. You know, it's entrapment, in other words. And for what? And I have to remind you also that Iran's never attacked the United States or declared an act of war. Or in Syria.
Now, what about the hostages in 79? What was that? Better Homes and Garden?
That was, a response, a retaliation towards the 1953 Operation Bootstrap, I think it was.
So they waited until 1979 to violate international law.
No, I think it was, just a boiling over where they didn't have that ability to make that. But those were, that's the religious side of that. You know, you're going to have radicals. You're going to have reaction to that stuff.
Religious people run Iran?
They do, but are the religious people running Israel?
I don't think Netanyahu's a rabbi.
So he's secular?
I believe so.
Okay, so Israel made an act of war when they attacked the USS Liberty.
Well,
a lot of people haven't forgot that.
Right. And Ron Paul, Jim, thank you for the call. We're just kind of going in circles. Coming up next, State Senator Jim Patrick, he wants to make sure kids that graduate Idaho high schools actually know about Idaho and American government. Is this a good idea? We'll find out next. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Thank you all for joining us. We will have Senator Jim Patrick on at another time. We're trying to get a hold of him, so we'll reschedule Senator Patrick to make it easier for you to keep up with me. And look, by my goodness gracious, I have enough time just trying to figure out where we're going. The big controversy, as you heard Maggie O'Mara talk about moments ago here at 580 KIDO, was Idaho lawmakers, some of them, walking out during a Hindu prayer at the State House. Now, this begs a lot of questions about religious tolerance. This begs a lot of questions about, are we a Christian nation? Are we a religious nation? Here is the latest from Channel 7. Then again, let's talk about it. And I've had people on Facebook saying to me, Kevin Miller, look, they've taken prayer out of schools. They rip Christianity. They take God out of our lives. And now we have this in Idaho. It's too much.
Being sent in front of the Idaho Senate, saying that he didn't believe this was the place for it to be said. Vic was not disruptive. He simply just chose not to participate in the prayer.
Om Bhurbhuvah Svaha.
Rajan Zed started off the Senate with an ancient Hindu scripture, saying to keep the welfare of others always in mind. Now, once he was finished with his prayer, Senator did walk back in when they were doing the Pledge of Allegiance.
I need to make it clear. He has every right to be here. His First Amendment and my First Amendment rights are not violated by him being here.
There you have Senator Steve Vick of Dalton Gardens talking to Channel 7 here at 580 KIDO. He goes, look, the Hindu priest can come in here. He has a right to be here. He can give a prayer. He can do what he wants. But I have a right not to be there.
It's more a government endorsement of that that I'm opposed to. And I don't want to be seen as our country moving away from our Judeo-Christian traditions towards Hindu traditions, and by elevating him and this religion in that way, I believe that it could do that.
But most of them welcomed me. They came out and shake my hand, and it was very warm, and some of them hugged me. You know, that was good. And, you know, there are always differences in viewpoints, you know. They always will be there. You can see any world leader, you know, even Gandhi was criticized during when he was there. So all will be different viewpoints. So that is wonderful. That is what makes a country great, you know.
Zed has spoken at other state capitals all
over. And there we have it from Channel 7. Now, back in the Roy Moore days, and you heard Fox News talking about the Alabama judge, I would go back and forth. And perhaps being here in Idaho, perhaps getting older and smarter, I figured out, you know, there is something to stand up for, and that is our faith. Now, if the Idaho legislature wants to bring in somebody of a different faith, we are a country founded on religious freedom. But you go back to what the senator said, look, we're getting away from the Judeo-Christian faith. And, of course, everybody is going to be politically correct, and maybe that's our lot in life here, to say what people don't want to say to themselves because it's uncomfortable. When I hear that, I'm not really that comfortable, but I'm a Christian. When I hear that, I go, well, why did they have the young man in? That's my own personal opinion. And in the old days, I would argue, see, you let prayer in at all, and you got to let everybody in. So what's next for the conservative Idaho legislature? An Islamic prayer, Muslim prayer? Are all prayers created equal? Not according to the doctrines of faith, right? There is no moral relativism, faith relativism, when it comes to God. Judeo-Christian faith, the Hindu faith, the Muslim faith. Now, people are going to make fun or attack these senators. They had every right to leave, quite frankly. You know, would there have been this opposition if there was a pastor, a minister, someone of faith that said, you know, talked about Jesus Christ? Would people be upset about that? Probably. Why do we have God in there? Do you notice how it's framed? Well, the senators are bad because they walked out. They didn't agree. Now, and remember, take a look at how other things are played out. You have the Ada County Highway District Commission, who voted February 25th, 3-2, to allow prayer at the opening of each meeting. The director and some staff opposed the idea because it could make staff feel pressured to participate. Citizens complained prayer is not part of the ACHD mission. Aren't they the government? Don't we pledge allegiance to the flag, the Statue of Liberty? You've got Commissioner Paul Woods voted in favor of the policy, according to the Statesman. Asked the commission to reconsider its decision and the scope of the policy. My intent with the policy was to provide a brief moment at the beginning of each meeting to reflect on the freedoms that we have. Not for it to be prayer, not to be for it to an evangelical moment. You see, here's the deal. The Christians continue to, how should we put this, turn the other cheek. This is the season of Lent. This is the season where people of faith, some of us give up chocolate, some of us give up junk food, some of us give up swearing. What have you given up? What have you given up? I'll tell you my own personal needs, my own spiritual needs. If you were listening earlier with myself and Dave Burnett, I have dreams about my coworkers. I have dreams about my job. Dreams about performing. And when that much of your secular life comes over you, and you're not dreaming about your family or fun things, you need more God in your life. That's what I decided. I needed more God in my life. So I've committed myself to being more faith-based aware. And again, this is a secular show where we talk about God. But quite frankly, I think the ACHD should understand that they live in Idaho, not California. They live in Idaho, not Vermont. They live in Idaho and not one of these other socialist republics, and embrace the prayer. For if you do not stick up for God, who will? Now, why is it okay that the state legislature hails the Hindu guy coming in as a great moment, a great intellectual moment, and we have ACHD saying, well, we don't need any God. Well, who created us? The Creator, recognized by the Declaration of Independence. So two thoughts here, 580-5436. The Hindu guy coming in, that's great. The Hindu priest, want to be respectful of his faith. Quite frankly, I would be uncomfortable there. Quite frankly, are people making a statement? He travels the world to go to state legislatures. Is he a minister? Is he on a mission? Okay, you could say, well, it's a non-news story. I think that it is. I think that you have folks in the Idaho legislature wanting to be politically correct, want to make sure that the New York crowd loves them, which they never will. You'll never be one of them. And the other idea that ACHD, they passed the vote 3-2 to allow prayer. What's more harmful? Watching what's on the news? Watching what we call entertainment, which is more propaganda? Or prayer? What has a more derogatory impact on our lives, our feelings, our souls? Is it network television? Is it the internet, the web? Or is it thanking God for what we have and praying for the less fortunate? Our community is so blessed that we have such great secular and spiritual partnerships. The idea that ACHD would have an issue with people bowing for a moment of silence is ridiculous. I think they need to worry more about the bike lanes and the traffic congestion than the situation involving prayer. And as far as at the state house, I think that if you let one faith in, you've got to let everybody in. But let's remember our Judeo-Christian heritage. 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. Your thoughts on the Hindu prayer? If you were a member of the legislature, what would you do? And ACHD punting on prayer. Let's talk. 580-5436. It is 751.
John Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Coming up next hour, Steve Forbes. That's right, Steve Forbes will join us. Talking about prayer, your thoughts on having a Hindu prayer at the Idaho State Capitol during a session where three senators walk out, and ACHD saying no to prayer or possibly reconsidering prayer. What happened to freedom of a religion? Is it freedom from religion in Idaho? In Idaho. Linda and Emmett, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to chat a little bit about Netanyahu's speech last night and the absolute disgusting thing that our president did by not attending that speech. That was the biggest slap in the face I've seen out of a politician in a long time. And I was so mad by the time it was over with and they were talking about what the president was doing that I wanted to, it almost made me throw up. Israel is our only friendship on that side of the world. Everybody else is out to kill us. Israel is our friend. And I didn't see the president.
Well, he apparently doesn't like them. Got to run. Time for traffic now. 580 KID. 7:59, thank you for starting your day with us. Kevin Miller in the morning coming up next. Steve Forbes We talk the economy. We talk the future of Target and what it all means to you. Keep it here. Stay informed.